this session, we're going to deal with cultural differences in a very much more specific way. And I want to start by using the chalkboard just for a moment, and then we'll come back to the sheets that you have in front of you. Most of the time when we look at cultural differences, at least when we look at them from a Western perspective, we divide the world into Western values. Most of the time, Western values refer to countries that have drawn their primary influence from the Greeks, going back there, and the Greeks to the Romans, to Western Europe, to North America. And there's a lot of commonality in that because of the being rooted in Greek cultural values, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, etc. And the kind of logic, the kind of values, the kind of reasoning that they brought to the Western world. The majority world, then, that we refer to would be the larger population of the world that lies outside the West. Most of it, and there are some exceptions, of course. Some countries have become very much Western and also Oriental at the same time, like Japan, for example. But we still categorize them more in the Oriental sense, and their values are still deeply rooted in their past. And so as we look at these cultural differences, the first one that we're going to be looking at is communication, and particularly in the West, direct communication versus, in the majority world, a more indirect communication. We'll try to understand why it's indirect, what makes it direct, and why would it be more direct. And in reality, these two are extremes because most of the Westerners will probably function in this realm of directness in communication, and there will be some exceptions that will put them more here. But by and large, they would be on this side of the continuum. Most of the people in the majority world will function in that realm, but there will be plenty of exceptions and maybe even some people that will function more in the form of direct communication. But these would be the exceptions to the rule. So we're going to be talking about tendencies, what's generally true of people. There's a third kind of person, however, a third kind of culture. We call it third culture. And that is people who have lived in majority world culture and also have lived for a significant amount of time in the Western world. And we would call those bicultural people. That is, they enjoy both cultures somewhat equally within themselves. And they found a way to blend those two cultures together. So when they're in a majority world situation, they would tend to function more like here. Maybe not so much the extreme, but in this realm. And when they were in a Western cultural situation, they would function more in this realm. Not so much in the extreme, but sort of more in the central region. My own opinion is that the Western world and the majority world cultures are actually coming together to be more and more in the center. And so as our children and grandchildren grow up, their world is going to be much more in this domain. The people who are going to be most effective and most competent and most capable in the future are people who are going to be able to live comfortably in either world. They're going to be able to interpret and make those adjustments and be flexible and be equally comfortable in this kind of a culture and in this kind of a culture. And so the future belongs to people, in my opinion, who are actually bicultural in their way of thinking, their way of interacting, their way of communicating. Well, with that introduction then, let's take a look at the difference in communication that tends to be characteristic of Western and majority world cultures. In the Western culture, communication is direct. It's we use the active voice. We use nouns and pronouns to be specific in our communication. We like to communicate face-to-face, look me in the eye kind of thing. We're forthright. We tell it like it is. We just say what we think, and we don't If it's a situation where it's going to be sensitive, we don't want to be rude, so we'll be a little bit careful about how we use language, but even so, we'll get to the point, you see. There are a number of proverbs that support this direct language, at least proverbs in the West, proverbs in America, like, tell it like it is. Give it to me straight, you'll sometimes hear an American say or a Westerner say. Don't beat around the bush. Just say it. Put your cards on the table is another one. So Westerners tend to be very verbal. We're not so concerned about the environment around us, but the emphasis is on you, what you're saying, how you're saying it, your tone of voice, and are you being clear, and am I understanding you? So communication is direct, face-to-face, forthright, and verbal. Now, if you take a look at the majority world, we'll just keep looking back at this chart here. In the majority world, the communication tends to be indirect, particularly when communication is sensitive. People will use different ways of talking. For example, if there's a bit of a problem emerging between the two of us, they might use a parable or a story, or they might even use a third party. For example, if you and I are having some difficulty in understanding, we might go to Sasha, one of us, you know, and say, well, it's just a little bit difficult here. Sasha understands that we are asking him, or one of us will be asking him, not two of us together, but I might go and say, Sasha, you know, I'm not sure I'm understanding Igor. There's some things here, and maybe, you know, I need some help. He understands now that I'm asking him to be a mediator. And that mediator then handles the situation. We're going to be talking a lot more about this role of mediator in the next session, or after we finish these thoughts on cultural differences, because a mediator is so very important in conflict situations in much of the world. Whereas the Western culture tends to emphasize the verbal, the majority world culture often emphasizes the nonverbal. The context is important, the body language, who's present and who's absent, what's going on in the environment. For example, sometimes it's so important that even the destinies of a nation will be at stake in this environmental language, this nonverbal language. For example, you might remember, it's a number of years ago now, when Zimbabwe was under British rule and then came under white rule, and now a number, maybe 10, 12 years ago, under the rule of Robert Mugabe, the first black ruler of Zimbabwe. Well, when it was under the Ian Smith government, white rule, the Ian Smith government sent out quite a number of people into the areas of the country and said to the people, we think that this white government is going to be the best government for your future. But many of these white people who went out to talk to the bush people, the villages and so on, they had to have interpreters. So as the interpreters were interpreting this message, they would have a stick and pick up a leaf, and they would just be poking holes and passing the time like this. And it meant nothing to the white people who were speaking. But when it came time to ask the question, do you think you're going to vote for the white government as the future because that will be the best way for you to live here? Everybody said, yes, we will vote for the white government. And all over the country, this was happening. So these people who went out, the white people who went out to the villages with this message, they came back and they says, well, it's going to be an overwhelming majority of people are going to vote and the Ian Smith government will continue. The election came, the vote was counted, and you may remember they were strongly defeated. The Ian government went down in serious defeat. And everybody's saying, what happened? How did this happen that we could have all of these people say, we'll go this way, but they voted the opposite way? When these translators were translating and poking, at the same time poking holes in the leaf, the message to the people was, this man speaks lies. And everybody heard the nonverbal message, and the destiny of an entire country rested on this. But you see, the speaker, the white person, didn't see all of what was going on in the environment. It's what we call a low context. He was emphasizing words, and he thought that they would believe the words, and he could trust their word back to him. Well, we're going to talk about this cultural courtesy thing in a minute. So you have to look at the environment. You have to look at the nonverbals. You have to read the entire situation. So now the question then comes, why would you use indirect language? Well, this gets us into something called saving face, or honor, or shame. Those three words are somewhat similar. In the majority of the world, there's something called losing face. If you lose face, it's like being embarrassed or humiliated. And if I cause Igor, for example, to lose face, now I've committed a very serious offense. I've caused him to feel shame in front of his friends, in front of his students, perhaps, and that is a terrible thing for me to do. It's possible that I do it unintentionally as a Westerner, but it doesn't matter. It still means that Igor has experienced shame. In Thailand, the word for losing face is for somebody to tear off your face, to distort your face, and to make you appear ugly before your friends. That's what losing face means. In Zimbabwe, the word for losing face is for somebody to rub their feet on your face. Now, the dirtiest part of the human body in most of the world is the bottom of the feet. So now to have somebody rub their feet on your face, the idea of losing face, of being shamed, extreme humiliation. So now I say to Igor, you said you were going to come at 12 o'clock yesterday and you didn't come until 12:45. Now, that's just a statement of fact as far as I'm concerned. But for Igor, he's reading this as he seriously disappointed me. And he caused me problem. And now he feels shame and humiliation if you're in that kind of a situation. You see? Now, I didn't mean that, but that's what happened. And so this idea of losing face and feeling shame is a very critical kind of thing. Let me just give one other illustration because it'll carry over into our conflict session, which will be coming up soon. In Africa, in much of Africa, the indirect language is very important because it means that it allows us to not cause people to be shamed or to lose honor or to lose face. So this pastor and a missionary are going to go and see a fellow who's an elder in the church, but it now appears that he's been stealing money. And so they walk together to this person's home, his village, and then his home. And the missionary says to the pastor, you know, will you mind handling the situation? Because I think it will be better for you to do it. Pastor says, fine. And they go. And as the evening goes on and they're sipping tea together, they're sitting outside. And the pastor tells a story. And the story is about a situation that has to do with somebody taking something and other people being disadvantaged. And then he says to the man, "Do you understand? Do you understand?" And the man nods. And the pastor continues on, and they continue talking. And pretty soon the pastor says, "Well, we'll be on our way." As they're walking away and out of the distance of the village, the missionary says, "I thought we were going to confront." See, direct. I thought we were going to confront him with the fact that he's been taking some money. And the pastor of the local pastor says, we did confront him. Oh, really? When did this happen? And he says, well, remember when I told this story? Oh, yes, he says, I thought that was an excellent story, but I didn't see any repentance. Oh, he repented. When did he repent? When he nodded his head. That was repentance. Yes, he's sorry, and he won't steal anymore. Oh, well, he says, I missed all of that. And they continued on, and sure enough, the fellow had repented, and the problem was finished, you see. Well, if you're not aware of the context, when the pastor says, do you understand, it means, do you understand that you were the person in the story, and that we know that what you're doing, do you understand? And when he nodded his head, not only did he understand, but he repented. Now, if he would look away or something, or look down and not make any other further, mean he would not be repentant. Very interesting how all of this works. High context means you understand, you have to see what's going on in the environment. And the words are not so easily understood. But in a verbal culture, like the Western culture, direct language. Okay, I'm going to do one or two more, and then I'll ask if you have some illustrations out of your culture. So let's move to the next one, because we want to try to finish this. In the issue of community, in the West, we have a group of individuals or independent beings. So community is never really a strong bond of people who do a lot of things together, who have a family spirit, but we still see ourselves as individuals. So we can come and go in the group, we can do as we like, and we have some other proverbs or even some songs perhaps that you've heard that give this emphasis on independence. I gotta be me. Frank Sinatra, maybe you remember, I don't know. Do your own thing. You see, that's not a community building thing, that's you as an individual. Be all you can be. See, that's not us together, it's however I manage it. So even though there are teams and we work on consensus and we have office parties and things like that, the emphasis is still on the individual, doing what you want to do. So you can come and go and it doesn't matter. But if you look at community in the majority world, here you actually submit to group values. Your loyalty to the group is much more important than your loyalty to yourself. So the Japanese have a proverb, perhaps you have it as well, something like, the grass that sticks up gets cut off. Everybody is the same. In America, you sometimes see a photograph and it will be employee of the month, somebody who did a specially good job and they are honored and their picture's on the wall. In Japan, you'll never see that because it's the whole group effort. And they'll say, how can you honor one person? Wasn't there other people working? Weren't there people who were doing this over here and this over here? And if they didn't do that, this person wouldn't be able to be honored. And so everybody should be honored at the same time. Americans often get quite upset, or Westerners as a whole, if they have to work in Asia, in a very strong community society. Because the Asian person, the Asian supervisor will say, no, we must have more productivity, we must all show up and work on time, and he'll make all of these kinds of things, and then he'll say, no, let's get on with our day. Well, the Americans know that there's only one person who's been violating these rules, but the supervisor speaks to everybody as though they've all been violating. And so he speaks to the group. Well, the supervisor knows that there's only one problem in the group, but he speaks to everybody as though they're all the problem. And it's not a bad thing because it reminds us all that these are the rules, and then the one person will hear. Now, if the one person doesn't hear, doesn't do what's right, then the supervisor will quietly come and say to that person, you know, maybe your job is finished. But the Americans get very upset. Why is he taking our time and telling us this? We haven't done anything wrong, you see. But that's how the person functions.
TVS is a nonprofit project. Our joint effort will bring about the common purpose of making Christian education available around the world and developing good Christian servant leaders. You have a unique opportunity to partner in this effort through your prayer and or financial support of TVS Ministry. For more information, please visit www.tvseminary.com.
Well, let's take a look at the issue of foreigners. In the West, the foreigners are treated with a certain amount of distance, maybe some suspicion. Why are you here in the community? Why are you dressing the way you're dressing? But we make polite acknowledgement. They're here. They're in our country. You know, let them be. Let them do what they want to do. We won't bother them. They won't bother us. So again, kind of treating them with that polite distance. But in other countries, foreigners are treated differently. For example, in South Africa, I'm treated with enormous courtesy because I'm a guest in their culture. I'm not really a foreigner, I'm a guest. And so I'm treated with this honor and guest status. Almost anybody coming into an African country or an Asian country is treated with this wonderful guest status. But then there's something else going on called the relational yes. It is rude in many cultures of the majority world. It's very rude to say no to the guest in your country. So, for example, when I'm teaching at the Durban Bible College and my students and I go out to visit people, maybe on Sunday morning and invite them to come to church, they will say, yes, we will be there. And I say, great. You know, next one, yes, we will be there. And I say, great, and so on. And so we go back and set up more chairs because so many people are coming. How many do you think? How many of the people who said yes, say maybe 15 people said yes, we will come. In fact, we only knocked on 15 doors. 15 said they will come. How many do you think actually came? Zero. But yes, you're right. One or two might come. But in my case, it was zero. Now, I come from a verbal culture. That was the first point. I'm direct, face-to-face, will you come? Verbal, yes, they gave me their word. They answered. They said yes. That means they will be there. But they lied to me. Or did they? From my cultural perspective, they lied. From their cultural perspective, they were giving me the courtesy answer. What you would say yes to the guest because you can't say no to the guest. Oh, it took me a long time to see this, figure it out. But you see, I made a negative attribution. I made a negative judgment about them because they didn't do what I was expecting. And if you don't do what I'm expecting, I tend to fill in the blanks then with something negative about you. And so I said, they lied to us. Well, of course they didn't lie. They were just being kind and gracious. Now, what that means then is I have to change. Because if they're just going to say yes, then I'm not really going to have good communication here. So what I should have done is said, it would be a wonderful honor for you to join us today. We'd be pleased to see you. And not ask them the direct question, will you come to church this morning? Will you be there at 11 o'clock? That was the wrong thing to do. I was doing it my Western way, and it didn't work. And I eventually changed, I'll be happy to say. So there's a difference. Let's look at logic for a moment. In the West, we use what we call a linear logic. This confuses people a great deal, and I'm going to use the board again to illustrate. So if I'm preaching a sermon in the Western world, I'll announce my topic, and then I have an introduction and Roman introduction, And then Roman numeral 1 and subpoints, Roman numeral 2 and subpoints, Roman numeral 3 and subpoints, and then I have a conclusion. That's how most sermons are preached. That's how most speeches are given. Even articles are written that way, and we want people to write their papers in class that way. And if something happens, you see, the conclusion is based on our understanding the sequence. If this and this and this are true, then this will be true. But what happens if your child has to go to potty, to the bathroom, in the middle of the sermon or the speech? Well, there's a gap here, and now the conclusion is gone, you see. So we take your children away from you in America during church time. Now, I mean, I'm being a little bit facetious here, but because the children can disturb you, then... Well, in other parts of the world, I'll put it over here, so it's majority world, their logic is very different. In fact, there's probably about 5 or 6 forms of logic throughout the world, but this is quite common throughout Africa and much of Asia. You have a topic, and then you discuss it from this perspective. And then you come at it from this perspective. And then you give this illustration. And then you talk about it from that way, and so on. So now you've got maybe 6 or 7 points, and you come back all the time to the conclusion here. And you say the same thing 6 or 7 times. So if you have to take your child out to the bathroom, you're not going to miss the conclusion. It makes a lot of sense. So here's an illustration. In the Philippines, they have something called a rhinoceros beetle. It has a big horn. And so this rhinoceros beetle was flying around in the church. The Westerner is sitting here. The Filipino kid is here. He grabs a rhinoceros beetle. He pulls a string out of his pocket, ties the string onto the horn of the rhinoceros beetle, flips him up in the air in the middle of the sermon, and he's flying this rhinoceros beetle around and having wonderful time with him and doing, you know, different acts and so on. And then he brings him in for a landing, unties him, and lets him go. So here's his mother sitting next to him over here. She doesn't say anything. Here's the Westerner missionary. He can't say anything, but right next to him is the usher, you know. And he sees this, and he doesn't do anything. Nobody seems to care, except the Westerner says, you're going to disturb people. You're going to interrupt them. And if you interrupt them, they're going to lose this point, you see. Well, that's true only if you have this kind of logic that you're working with. If you have a different kind of logic and you lose this point, does that destroy the conclusion? Not at all. You're still going to hear it at least 5 or 6 times. So this form of logic becomes very important to understand how people speak, how they create a point, how they come to conclusions, how they structure their argument or their reasoning in order to establish what they feel is important. Now, I think for this session, we'll close because our time is gone. We'll finish this off in the next session. And then we'll come back and do the rest of the cultural differences.
Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 10, 11. How to give to TVS Ministry. You may give online at efta.org/givenow. In the description place, write Russia Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. Or make checks out to EFCA. Write on the check memo line, Russian Distance Learning, account number 24109-0150. mail to EFCA Donor Services, 901 East 78th Street, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55420-1300, or send your gift through PayPal for tvs.gift@gmail.com.